There was one lady, god sister of mine, Kaushalya, she's spoken here, I think. And she was sitting on a beach chanting, she was sitting on a beach taking LSD, and a flyer fell on her lap announcing that Prabhupada was on the island. So there was no temple there. Prabhupada was staying in Govindadasi's house, Gorsinder and Govindadasi. And she went over, and she's a very friendly girl. Indian women are a little bit shy, right? She was not shy. She sat down, began a conversation with Prabhupada, and she said, "Well, I see Krishna on LSD." Prabhupada said, basically he told her, "It's not the LSD, it's Krishna's mercy." So many of you have had mystical experiences. That's why you've become bhaktas. And in America, the man who does the polling for the elections is named Gallup. He's the most famous one. He became a born-again Christian, so he got interest in religion. So he did a survey, and they found 47-48% of the people in America feel they've had a personal communion with a personal God. So Krishna comes to us, and in different ways. Sometimes in nature, somebody looks around and they see the beauty in nature and they see the engineering in nature. Sometimes someone has a dramatic experience and they know God has saved them. So that's Swami Krishna Prem, very famous World War I pilot. He was saved by an act of God. And he was convinced God existed, and he went to search out God, and he found God as Krishna. Long story, beautiful story. You can read about it in Dr. Kapoor's book, Saints of Vrindavan. Anyway, my story was after my drug experience, it took a while to release myself from that drug scene because it was degenerating in some ways. The people I was with were degenerating. Not all, but some. And later on, I had an out-of-body experience. So I was out of my body, floating, looking at my body, and appreciating the engineering behind this body. This is an amazing piece of engineering. I know a lot of you study engineering, right? This is the new Brahman art, engineering, either software engineering or civil engineering. Look at this engineering. Woo! See that? The Japanese are working very hard making artificial, trying to make an artificial hand, then an artificial body. Then you can have your own love slave. That's the materialist mentality. So, but I was floating above my body, looking down at it, and seeing the amazing engineering behind this. This was a gift of God. This was not from drugs. This was descent of grace, they call it. It's not that uncommon. People have it in accidents. People have it when they're very sick. There's a separation. So I'm floating above my body. I'm looking at my body, appreciating the engineering, realizing I'm separate from my body. Aham Brahmasmi, I'm spirit. I'm looking at my body, what an amazing piece of engineering this is. And appreciating wherever there's good engineering, there's a good engineer, right? Right? Nothing happens from nothing. Even the tripod there was designed, right, by an engineer. Simple engineering. This is more complex. So the understanding that God exists became very clear. And then I became a little frightened. I thought I need a teacher. So instinctively I knew, being out of my body, there was some danger. Of course, if you have spiritual education, you know there's bhutas, ghosts, spirits, that can try to take you over because they are cursed, because they've done sinful activities, yet the desire for material enjoyment is there. So if they can get into your body, they will try to do it. So I had some instinct. There was danger. And I thought also I needed a teacher. This was all very new. And all this went on very quickly, and then whoosh, I'm back in my body. So for months, my mind was disturbed. I couldn't discuss this with anyone. And then I decided I was going to try each religion for 6 months. I was brought up in Judaism. In Judaism, there's a bhakti religion, but it was very vague. there was not much information for me. And Christianity, came from a Jewish background. I saw how the Catholic Church has made much trouble in the world, trying to homogenize everybody. You know what homogenize is? Everybody know what that word means? Like they take milk in the West, and they try to take the little lumps out of the milk, make it smooth. So they wanted to homogenize everyone. So everyone was one religion, but by force, by intimidation, by bribing. And that anyone who protested, they didn't like them. They were the enemy. In India, it's harmonize, right? You have very old traditions along with new traditions. You have the Naga Babas. You have the followers of Vishnu before the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And now you have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And everyone gets along, right? We respect the old traditions. And we accept the new traditions because God is very merciful and he makes it easier for us. Anyway, so I became a devotee because a friend of mine, Bhagwat Das, came. And I was curious. And I started reading Prabhupada's books and I liked them very much. It was about a year and a half later before I actually saw Prabhupada. He was traveling. I had just missed him coming into Boston. I saw the devotees in New York when I joined in Boston. And after a year and a half, Prabhupada came. So by this time, I had read Prabhupada's Bhagavatams. We had the original Bhagavatams that he brought from India. And I was impressed. I read Easy Journey to Other Planets, and I could relate my own mystical experience. So, but I wanted to see if this was a genuine guru, because there's so many cheaters in spiritual life. And so part of me, when Prabhupada was coming, a part of me was cynical. Just like you have a very nice devotee in your community, Srinathji. He was very cynical, questioning. And he went back and forth between Chinmay and Prabhupada. He was a very intelligent man. I think he was an engineer, is that correct? So engineers, they like to understand how things work. Anyway, so when Prabhupada came into the airport, he looked very majestic. He came off the ramp, and the sun was on him, beautiful golden sun. But still, he came in. And part of my mind was questioning, is he genuine? So I'm a photographer. So this is a telling moment, photography, when a picture is being taken. So Prabhupada was given this big garland made of lotuses. One devotee went into the botanical gardens at night and stole many lotuses from the park. And he made, big lotuses are heavy. He made a huge garland, Petit Pavan. He will come and speak sometimes. He's an astrologer, very nice devotee. He gave it to Prabhupada. It was a very heavy garland. Anyway, Prabhupada turned to face the photographers. So this is a telling moment. So everybody says, oh, don't take my picture. Oh, no, I am nothing. And in that moment, right? A moment, right? So I was watching Prabhupada, but Prabhupada turned to face the camera, and he stood with dignity like a diplomat representing his nation. So his nation is Goloka Vrindavan. So this was not about him. I'm here to deliver the truth, to serve my Guru Maharaj, who desired that because I speak English, I should spread this to the English-speaking countries. So that was my first impression, that he was not in for the adoration, fame, and distinction. Because it's very obvious in that moment. Next, they had gotten a room for Prabhupada at the Sheraton Hotel in Boston. But he rejected it. He said, these hotels are like brothels. The rich men, they bring their girlfriends there. He didn't like it. He wanted to stay at the temple. Our temple was an old funeral home. They used to bring dead bodies and treat them. It's an old building built probably in the late 1800s. Big building. It's torn down now. There's a, I think somebody said there was a chicken place there now. Kali Yuga marches on, right? So Prabhupada wanted to stay in the temple. So there was not much facility. Devotees came from New York, from Montreal, and Boston devotees. And young people are very noisy, full of shakti, right? Full of energy. Anyway, we only had one little room, a mat this thick for Prabhupada to sleep on, a small dais. And but Prabhupada was happy to stay in the temple, even though there was so much noise going on. So I did not really get any personal association with Prabhupada in Boston. And then after that, he went down to New York, and that's where I took initiation with many, many other devotees. And I got to go on a walk with Prabhupada, and I was taking pictures. And I got a very nice series of pictures in Prespect Park. Sometimes you see that picture of Prabhupada walking by water. That was the lake in Prespect Park in Brooklyn. And still not much personal association. But Prabhupada gave classes, initiated many people. And he worked on his Bhagavatams in his room. I'm very tired. I didn't sleep well the last 2 days. So I'm going to stand up and get a little air. And then I'll continue.
See, protecting my words.
So, and then I went to, I was able to convince the devotees to let me go to Europe to photograph Prabhupada the following year. And I had came into Prabhupada's room, and there was an Anglican nun there. I got a very beautiful picture of it, and they had such a sweet exchange. She had met Revatinanda Swami on the streets, and she was curious, and he invited her to meet Prabhupada, and they had a very nice talk. I was in Delhi, and one devotee said to me, he said, some people fear God, and some people love God. So she loved God, so there was no fear with Prabhupada. Oh, I'm talking to a heathen. So that wasn't there. So they had a nice exchange. The following year, we opened the manor, and Shamsundar Prabhu, he invited many church people from the local area and tried to get many celebrities. So Prabhupada would sit out on the lawn, and this one nun, Prabhupada was talking about nonviolence, ahimsa, thou shalt not kill, because some interpret it as thou shalt not murder, but Prabhupada interprets the Ten Commandments as thou shalt not kill. So this nun was different. She was, you can see, she was getting upset. So finally she said to Prabhupada, she said, well, you cut the grass, meaning you kill, right? And Prabhupada's answer was, if I cut your hair, does that mean I kill you? So he had a perfect answer. Am I speaking okay? Is my accent too hard to follow? No, you're okay? So then we were in Prabhupada's room in Bury Place the year before, and one English gentleman, he had been coming for a while, he was in his 30s. He had been reading Prabhupada's books. He couldn't understand about Junya Haridas, why Lord Chaitanya was so heavy on Junya Haridas. And just for talking to an old lady, and I think, because he was sannyasi. So he couldn't understand why Lord Chaitanya banished him, and that Junya Haridas felt so bad he committed suicide. Of course, when later on we understand in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Junya Haridas would come in his subtle form and sing to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Anyway, this gentleman thought this was very harsh. So he asked what happened to Junior Haridas. And Prabhupada said, Junior Haridas went back to Godhead. He said, just because the father chastises the son, that doesn't mean he doesn't let him back into the house. So this was Prabhupada's answer. So when you're around your guru in the early days, guru is like father, like daddy. So we are like children and we want attention. So I wanted attention. So I was leaving to go back to New York. And before that, I'd asked some question. Did I ask him there? Let me see if I remember where I asked those questions. I think it was in Bury Place. Anyway, it's not important. So I went into Prabhupada's room. I said, Prabhupada, I'm leaving to go back to New York to work on your press. And I thought I'd get a gentlemanly reply. You know, how did he know me? He had just taken initiation. We had not really talked. So he said, you were leaving? Aw. Then he got up and he walked across the room and he put his garland on me. So I was kind of shocked. And in that moment, I realized his greatness, that he was trying to spread Krishna consciousness. And he was a very noble person. Everyone thinks I'm very special, I'm very noble, I do good things. But with him, I could see he was very special. And I said, Prabhupada, I'm such a fool. And he said, that is good. He said, you remain a fool your whole life. So what is this? And he said, you know, the story of Lord Chaitanya and his spiritual master. And something was making me speak. And he said, well, his spiritual master said he was too foolish to understand Vedanta. You should just chant. And then Prabhupada smiled. But the intimacy was too great, because in that moment, just before, I could see Prabhupada was looking at me, and he was not looking at my body, he was looking beyond my body, beyond the dirt of my mind, to me being some sort of associate of Krishna. He was looking through me. So, this is very unusual. Because we're all very good at hiding our dark side. But he would see my dark side and it didn't disturb him. Anyway, so I crawled out of the room after that. The intimacy was too great. He saw too much of me. We can hide ourselves from each other. But you cannot hide from Paramatma and you cannot hide from a pure devotee. But still he loved me, despite my darkness. Anyway, I would ask Prabhupada different questions at different times, and these were be of use to you. I said, Prabhupada, sometimes the spiritual master is not present. I have a question that's too detailed for the scriptures. What should I do? He said, if you chant Hare Krishna very nicely, all the answers will come from within. I said, Prabhupada, sometimes I fight with my God brothers. Is that bad? And he said, no, not necessarily. So other times he told in one devotee, he said, if someone is doing wrong and you don't say something, then you share in the karma. So Prabhupada is Krishna conscious. He's not diplomat here to stroke us, you know. Then Jadarani, who is one of the artists, great lady, devotee of Prabhupada, she was a bit cynical. So she asked me to ask Prabhupada two questions when I went to New Vrindavan. First question is, are you present in your pictures? So I asked Prabhupada. And Prabhupada's answer was, if you think of me, then I am there. So this is useful for you, right? We are Aham Brahmasmi, we're spirit. So Prabhupada is not dead. He's in a different energy vibration. So he said, if you think of me, I'm there. Second question, there was always politics in every religious organization. I'm sure you've already heard your share of politics, right? She had some doubt. Are you reading your letters before they go out? Because secretaries would get the gist and write it up and type it up, and then it would go out to the temples, questions for Prabhupada. So I don't know, I had the nerve to ask that question, but somehow or another I had the nerve to ask that question. And Prabhupada had some letters on his desk that he was to sign, and his answer was, he just looked down at the letters and started reading them. That was his answer. Anyway, so after Bury Place, we would go on walks with Prabhupada from Bury Place. And, I'll tell that story later. How much time do I have left for telling stories? So I don't want to delay you. Half an hour. Half an hour, okay. So I'll save that story for later. And don't get old if you can avoid it. It's not much fun. You don't have much energy. 5 years ago, I was strong. Now I'm 66. Inside, I'm 16, but look at this. Time cheats us all, right? Maya, in the form of time, she's a big cheater, big gunda. And she's very good. Like you see the Indian pickpockets, they're very expert. These are generations of expert pickpockets. They can work in teams. One starts a conversation. Hey, how are you? Do you have the time? Meanwhile, the other one is sticking a hand, taking out of the pocket. So India has many experts, expert Brahmins, expert Shastris, expert Ayurvedas, expert pickpockets. And Maya is the biggest cheat, the biggest gunda, although she's a great devotee. But her skills are like an expert gunda. And her great skill is she makes everybody forget time. So, and until one day you look in the mirror and go, oh, what's this? What's this? What's this? So Maya's very expert in those ways. Anyway, with Prabhupada, the next year we got the manor and we had a big opening. And Shyamasundara Prabhu had had a lot of success in Bury Place, the Beatles, and getting the Radhakrishna Temple album out, which was a big success in the English music scene. But opening the manor, he tried to invite many big people, not so many came. Donovan came, he was a musician. And he was spiritually inclined, but he came with his girlfriend. She felt a little threatened by Prabhupada, so she was holding on to Donovan's leg like this. She was afraid Donovan might get too spiritual and start wearing saffron. So she was a little attached. And let's see, we would go on walks with Prabhupada in the country there. I got to stand up a little. I got to get a little circulation going because it's kind of hot. You can all go, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. You got to get the blood rushing, right? Otherwise, we tend to go to sleep. In the early days, the devotees would work very hard. And they have to do their japa in the morning, and sometimes they're standing and they're doing japa and they fall asleep on it. So, things that impressed me about Prabhupada were little things. Like in Paris, they were better at getting celebrities to come. So the head of the French National Buddhist Society came, He was from Vietnam, a very affable gentleman. We thought, oh, there would be a great philosophical debate between Buddhism and Vaishnavism. Nope, didn't happen. He was a very nice man, and he came just diplomatic to say hello. That was it. There was no great discussion. And he was a very nice man. Years ago, if you'd go to Mathura Station, they'd have these dolls. They call them bobble dolls of Brahmins, of a Brahmin with a pin like this. And in the wind, the Brahmin is going like this. So that Buddhist, he was like that. Very humble, bowing like this, but no great conversation. But there was a French lady in the room, and she tried to ask a question of Prabhupada, and Prabhupada saw after a while he was not getting anywhere with this Buddhist gentleman, and he turned his attention to her, and he began answering her questions. So this was interesting to me, because Prabhupada was not interested in the celebrity. He was interested in sincerity. Didn't matter if you were a big person or a little person, man or woman. Women here, they're very, take a humble position, right? They sit in the back. But Prabhupada didn't require that of people in the West. And he began answering her questions. She liked Prabhupada. Later on, she asked, should our family move into the temple? And Prabhupada said, no. Many years passed, maybe 6-7 years ago, I met her in Vrindavan. And her story was that her husband, after some time, got sick and passed away. So she had to take care of him. So Prabhupada maybe knew something and was going to happen. But she was still loyal to Prabhupada after many years. I'm trying to remember some other stories. We had a big advertisement for Prabhupada in Paris. They got a big hall, big auditorium, and there were posters everywhere. See, I was a photographer, so I was always in and out. See, Prabhupada emphasized this is the more important sense of hearing. Even materially, people reveal themselves very quickly through their speech. If you listen, sometimes you're thinking, oh, she's a very beautiful lady, and you fantasize, oh, she would make a wonderful wife. But if you're listening, she's going, ah, bah, 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 bah. I want this, I want that, I want this, I want that. Not you ladies, don't worry. But sometimes like that. And for the ladies, sometimes the man is thinking, me, 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 I. And he's not thinking, oh, this is my wife, this will be my wife, I will have to take care of her. She will be the mother of my children. He's not thinking, all he's thinking is, me, 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 I. So the speaking reveals things. So this is the most important, just like you're sitting and you're hearing Bhagavatam. But mine was the eyes, a blessing and a curse. I got to document Prabhupada photography, but I was always moving around, so I couldn't always hear what he was saying. So in France, they had a big auditorium. They had a nice big Vyasasan. And then one man, a Frenchman, raises his hand and he's protesting why you're sitting on that throne. So part of the pride of France is we kicked out our king. So we don't like people sitting on thrones. This is the attitude of some people. So Prabhupada explained why he was qualified to sit on a Vyasasan. He tried his best. But afterwards, we went to Germany, and Prabhupada said his comment, he said, these big Vyasasans are not for this age. So we had a small engagement at a place called Bad Homburg, and they laid out all these pillows and put cloth on the pillows. And Prabhupada sat there. So this was not a gorgeous Vyasa-san like you have a beautiful one here for Prabhupada. In India, you understand, to glorify the seat, to give the seat of the of Vyasadev. But in the West, they didn't understand. But when you buy an expensive piece of jewelry, like a nice necklace for your wife, gold necklace, comes in a nice box. And you open the box, and it's just mostly cloth, and then the necklace. So the simple cloth makes the necklace stand out. Beautiful. So that simple cloth, Vyasa-san, made Prabhupada stand out. So Prabhupada was the Ratna. Like the Kohinoor diamond, he was the Ratna. And he was satisfied. Whatever audience came, big or small. Because I'm tired, it's hard to remember all the stories offhand. We were in Mumbai. In those days, we didn't have the big temples. And we had the apartments there. And some people who have been coming for a long time remember. Makes me a little sad because now they have the big quarters for Prabhupada, very opulent quarters. And he didn't stay there very long, only towards the end of his life. Before that, he had a simple apartment, like many of you are living in simple apartments around Mumbai. Very simple place. So I would go into his room. And one time one man came in, he was saying, Gandhi, 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 really talking about Gandhi and Gandhi's Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada just said, well, you know, Gandhi said Krishna was imagination. And the man got upset. He said, what? No. Gandhi never said Krishna was imagination. So Prabhupada was very intelligent. He had two Bhagavad Gitas on his, what do you call those? The big closets. What do you call those things? Like a cupboard. And they had his servant pulled the Gandhi one down. And he had told him where to open up. And there it said. Gandhi said in his Gita, Krishna was imagination. I know he's a national hero. But that's what he said. He was trying to be universal. Little Mayavadi. In that. We're all one. And Prabhupada said he was a saint among the politicians and a politician among the saints. Prabhupada was very straightforward. Sadhu must be straightforward. Sadhu means one who cuts. But, you know, he was diplomatic. And he did it in a very intelligent way. He used Gandhi's own words. So they didn't argue. Another man in England was saying something, and Prabhupada said, no. And the man said, yes, it's in the book. And Prabhupada said, well, you bring the book, and then we'll talk. Prabhupada, he knew the man was talking, but he didn't know. So he was very expert, Prabhupada, how to deal with people. One man came to us in, there was a man who wrote a book on Krishna in French language in Geneva. Prabhupada spoke at the United Nations in Geneva. Small group, UNESCO. And they had one man come to the temple. He'd written a book on Krishna in French language. They read a little bit to Prabhupada. And the man changed his mind, didn't want to come, but devotees were enthusiastic. They went out in a car and they brought him anyway. So the man sat, and they had read some stuff from the book to Prabhupada, and the man said, it took me 7 years to write this book. And Prabhupada said, in a very nice way, he said, and still there's some mistakes. So he didn't say it in a proud way. He thought this would be an opening for a dialogue. So if the man is sincere, he would say, well, what do you mean? But he turned cold, very cold. And after a while, he left. So Prabhupada said to the devotees, he said, so we speak the truth, so we make enemies. But of course, the devotee is no one's enemy. Look at how Prabhupada signed his letters. your ever well wisher. So in India, you know what a sutra is. A sutra is a compression of knowledge. So how Prabhupada would sign his letters, your ever well wisher, this I call the Prabhupada Sutra. So this is what we're all striving to become, everyone's well wisher. Even the Buddhists, Nirvishesh, Sunyavad, the Buddhists and the impersonalists, we are their well wishers also. They may see us as enemies, but we are everyone's well wisher. And so it was with Prabhupada. But ironically, later on, this same man wrote a very nice review of Prabhupada's books. So we have to stick to the truth as diplomatically as possible to encourage people. But we stick to our truth. Sometimes we preach and people will get upset. And then life will see, oh, this sadhu, they gave me a true answer. But I didn't appreciate it at the time. So if you want instant gratification, oh, you are such an intelligent person. You have given me such great knowledge. Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. Let me touch you. You're not going to get it. We serve to help others. Some may appreciate very quickly, some not. Let's see, where else do we go? We went to Sweden, England. Well, yeah, I'm trying to remember something that'll be useful for you. It shouldn't be about my personal relationship with Prabhupada. You all have Prabhupada relationship. Shiksha Guru is, in this case, the most powerful guru. You may have your Diksha Guru, and all gurus who give us even one syllable, according to Chanaka, that leads us to the truth, he should be honored. But Prabhupada, he gave the Shastra, which you already had in many ways, but he gave the example of compassion. You have your great acharyas in India, Ramanujacharya, Vallabhacharya, Nimbarka. The characteristic of a great acharya is compassion, and this Prabhupada showed. He took Bhagavad Dharma and brought it out to the world. This does not belong to India, this belongs to the world. This religion is not Hinduism. This religion is Sanatan Dharma. It belongs to everyone. The top of the back to Godhead, where there is light, there cannot be darkness. So the great Mahatmas, they bring light to the world, even though the world may not appreciate. Whew. Take a little drink. Yeah, it's getting old. It's terrible. I don't like it. Prabhupada had a lot of energy, though. One devotee once said, the only one who can keep up with Prabhupada was Prabhupada. We were young. We would do programs at night. And then we'd come back, and the next morning we'd sleep late, but Prabhupada would be up, go on his morning walk. He'd look around, well, how come everybody isn't here? Places like England. And Prabhupada said, and I'm guilty of it. I'm not under an acharya for this. He said, if you don't get up early, he said, even the birds get up early. He said, if you don't get up early, then you're spiritually ill and materially ill. He was very straightforward. The first temple they had in Paris was a teeny little house. And the room, Prabhupada's room, was maybe from this side of the altar to here, and from here to the wall. That was Prabhupada's room. He's sitting there. Some of the GBCs were sitting with him. I was taking pictures. His arm went up on the desk, his sleeve dropped, and he had three watches on. So people would give him watches. Sometimes very expensive watches, sometimes cheap watches. He accepted it as a gift. But a good Vaishnava does not like to waste time. So before he would give up the old watch, he would want to make sure the new watch kept good time. And maybe the third watch was maybe the time in India or something. But that was his habit. And Guru Kripa Prabhu, very great devotee. He did very great service for Prabhupada. More military style. He was in Vietnam. He was a Vietnam veteran. He worked in a MASH hospital. A MASH hospital is where they take all the wounded and dying soldiers for immediate care, right off the battlefield from helicopters. So he had seen a lot of the ugliness of life, of war. We had a few devotees like that who were veterans. Uddharada Prabhu, he was an army ranger. Anyway, Guru Kripa, he collected a lot of money for the temple in Vrindavan in wild ways in Japan. They were like pirates. They did many things to collect the money because we were a new movement. In India, the pious people would come to the temple to see Prabhupada. But most people, where is money, where is money, where is money, where is money? And Prabhupada was just another sadhu. Now we have the big temples, some people are coming and giving respect. But Indian people weren't giving so much money. Some were giving money. The Dalmia family, they gave some money for the building of the temple in Vrindavan. And one lady donated the land. Anyway, Guru Kripa Prabhu, with the watches, he was very good at raising money. So he got Prabhupada a nice Rolex watch. You all know Rolex is top-of-the-line watch. So Prabhupada was detached, so somebody gave him a new watch. He took the Rolex and gave it to somebody else. So Guru Kripa kept trying to find that person he gave it to get the watch back. Maybe he thought the devotees worked too hard to get the money for that watch. Or he wanted Prabhupada to have a very nice watch. Anyway, Guru Kripa is a great devotee, unconventional. We had a lot of unconventional devotees. And here it's easy to sell a book because your families are all coming from pious families. That's why you're here. Grandmother was devotee, grandfather, you all have stories, mystical stories in your family. But in the West, they don't know. They think we're puggle walking around in skirts, sheets, and with shaved heads. There's Christian tradition, Jewish tradition. So we had to use so many tricks to get people to buy books. We'd use quick mantras. So many things. Anyway, these are the great devotees. So when they come here, you should give them nice respect that they had given their youth to go out into the streets. In dhotis and saris, they would go out all day long. Sometimes in the evening, too, to distribute in the big cities. Sometimes they were insulted. Sometimes they were attacked. So when they come here, they may be older now and maybe not following conventional program, you should give them respect. They did great service when there was no opportunity for adoration, fame, and distinction. Now, in Paris, in that little room, he made all the GBCs sit down. There was two or three of them, two of them, his servant. Everyone sat down. He made me put my camera down. And his instruction, because he saw GBCs as students, not equals, students. They were managers, but they were still students. And he spoke straightforward. He said, if you do not follow, if you do not practice, he said, then all you have is the trouble you went through to get the knowledge. So he saw all his managers as students as well. And in Mumbai, he was getting a massage on the roof one day. Nitai Prabhu was massaging him. And one GBC came, and he had information about another GBC. And he was what they call in English squealing. You know what squealing means? So he was squealing on another GBC. That other GBC had done something wrong. And he was telling Prabhupada. And Prabhupada got upset. He said, I give them a little power. And they say, do this, do this, do this. He said, no. He said, first you get them to love you, then they'll do whatever you want. So I'm looking at this GBC and I'm thinking, is he really understanding what Prabhupada is saying, or is he thinking, this is a good way to control other people? So I'm watching. Anyway, it was good advice Prabhupada was giving. That's why he would sign his letters, your ever well-wisher. So we have to be everyone's well-wisher, even the people that irritate the heck out of us, and they are there. People carry their dysfunctions from childhood. And daddy used to talk rough to me, so if somebody says something in a certain tone of voice, then they're insulting me and I have to... So we have to know psychology as well. We're everyone's well-wisher, but we know some people are disturbed by their upbringing. Prabhupada was very expert in how to deal with people. Sometimes he would get angry. I was a photographer. I was very passionate. I loved the mudras when Prabhupada spoke. So he corrected me a number of times. First time on the walk, I was walking ahead of Prabhupada, and he didn't like that. And I explained, well, I needed the pictures for, I was working for Back to Godhead magazine. So he accepted. Then when he would speak, I'd like to catch the hand movements when Prabhupada would speak. So I had a Canon camera. Some of you know about cameras. They have a mirror inside, single lens reflex. The mirror goes up, and then the shutter goes across, and the picture is taken. So Canon was a good name for that camera because it was very loud. So I'm taking pictures of Prabhupada when he's speaking, and he didn't like it. And he said, no more cut, cut while I'm speaking. And he said it disturbed his train of thought. So he would close his eyes sometimes when he's speaking, and he would think, what am I going to say next? It's called train of thought. Anyway, later on, I thought, well, we have more money. We got Leica cameras, beautiful lenses and Leica cameras, and very sharp, very expensive cameras. We had more money in those days. But still, they were used cameras. Well, one of them was a new one. Anyway, but this kind of camera didn't have a mirror. So it was a much more quiet camera. And the shutter would just go across like that. You'd have a viewfinder and no mirror popping up. So again, I took advantage to try to catch Prabhupada with the mudras. This time he corrected me and he said, no more ch-ch while I'm speaking. So Prabhupada had a very refined sense of hearing. Later in Mayapur, we would drive him crazy because devotees would be slamming doors. You're all full of shakti. You're all young people. Like young hanumonkeys, right? So that would disturb him, the slamming of the doors. Ah. So, but one day he was sitting in his room in Mayapur with one of his god brothers. and he was encouraging his god brother to speak. And it came up, you know, the photography, and I said, well, Prabhupada, I'd just really like to catch you with your mudras. And he gave me permission to photograph while he was speaking to his god. And he did a lot of mudras. Those pictures became famous of Prabhupada in Mayapur. You see him at his desk speaking like this. They use it a lot in their propaganda work. And I'm trying to remember some of the other stuff. How much time do I have? I'm going to try to fill it. How much time do I have left? Time's finished now? Okay, so I'll tell a last story about Prabhupada. Prabhupada was already sick. The last time I saw Prabhupada was the last Mayapur festival, Mayapur Vrindavan festival. And he was already sick. And Tarun Kanti Ghosh came to see Prabhupada. Some of you know Tarun Kanti Ghosh. He was like the lieutenant governor of West Bengal at the time. Some of you older folks, you may have heard of Tarun Kanti Ghosh. His grandfather was a very great devotee named Sushir Kumar Ghosh, who founded the Amrit Bazaar Patrika, a newspaper in Calcutta. And he was the one who gave Bhakti Vinod the name, the seventh Goswami. They were friends. They had some differences later on, nothing big. And so Tarun Kanti Ghosh was grandson or great-grandson of Sushir Kumar Ghosh. Sushir Kumar Ghosh was patriot. He was trying to get the British to quit India. When Queen Victoria's son came to visit India, he was going to come visit their house. They were a very prestigious family. But you know, these Bengalis, they're very fiery, right? Of all the Indians, they're the most fiery. Of course, the Maharashtrians, they're pretty tough too. They fought against Aurangzeb, right? Shivji. So when you guys need to, you can be pretty tough. The Sikhs were tough. When the Portuguese tried to take over Karnataka, Kerala, the local people fought back. So you can be tough. The Bengalis are very fiery. So this Sushir Kumar Ghosh, he wrote British go home type of stuff on the front of his house before the prince came, Victoria's son, so he didn't come. He was insulted. His brother said, you will tire of all this political stuff. You should be more involved in spiritual stuff. But he was fiery and he was quit India movement. But after a while he became tired. The family had no spiritual literature in the house. So he became curious and he ordered a Chaitanya Charitamrita. Said that when he received it in his hands, he began shaking. So this was the beginning of his waking up. And he fought the British then by writing books in English. Very eloquent writer and plays in English. He wrote this book, Lord Gauranga or Salvation for All, to try to explain the culture in English to the British. Anyway, if you go to Vrindavan, you know that big wooden Lord Chaitanya near Gopinath Bazaar? That was Sushir Kumar Ghosh's deity. So he had a little bit of a change in his life, huh? And now it's under the care of the Radharaman devotees. Anyway, his grandson came to visit Prabhupada. And he said to Prabhupada, oh, I was just in Pune. I saw Rajneesh's ashram. And he said to Prabhupada, he said, you know, you're the only one preaching the real Dharma of India. And then he said to Prabhupada, he said, the election is coming. So I come to get your blessings in the election. And Prabhupada said, democracy is no good. So Shikimar Ghosh, Tarun Kanti Ghosh, what could he say? And then he said a few moments later, he said, well, democracy with so many political parties. Prabhupada said, no, democracy is no good. What can Sushir Kumar Charnkanti Ghosh say? You all know. You're proud of your country. You're proud of your culture. But you're not so proud of your government, right? Prabhupada liked democracy on a small level. Like you have in the villages. What do they call Pancha? Yeah, he liked that. And even now there's some politics, so I'll leave it out, how ISKCON should be governed. And anyway, after the talk, there was some ladies sitting there, like you nice ladies are sitting there. You nice ladies are sitting there, very quiet. And they didn't. So Tarn got up, and he put his head on Prabhupada's lap. And Prabhupada was rubbing his head just like you rub your little boy's head, right? When you have a child, you rub his head. And Tarn's head was on Tarn looked like a little boy, not big politician. He was very happy. Prabhupada is rubbing my head. So then he left. And Prabhupada was very ill at this time. Bengal has always been a problem place because of communism. And they don't like big land holdings. And the fanatical communists, they don't like religion. So Prabhupada would give extra attention to people like Charnkanti Ghosh because our position in Bengal was very delicate. Anyway, after he left, because Prabhupada got up from his sickbed to speak to him, after he left, there were some nice ladies, like you ladies are sitting here, and they only wanted the darshan of a holy man. And they were very quiet, but Prabhupada asked them, began talking to them, you know, where they came from, a little bit, nothing deep philosophical, but he was giving them attention, because they came to have the darshan of a holy man. And of course, you ladies, you all know, you've had your granny gurus, and they told you all the stories about Krishna and Bhagavad Gita. So you already have your education. Different sampradaya, granny sampradaya, grandma sampradaya. So he didn't feel the need to give a lot of philosophy to these ladies. But it impressed me. He was very sick, he was very tired. He did what he had to do with Charnkanti, which he loved also. He loved everybody. He saw you see the conversation was very straightforward. Giriraj Prabhu, he told me that they were in a car one time when Tarn was at the beginning of his career, and he said, well, I want to run for politics. And Giriraj was about to try to encourage him, like we tried to encourage people, and Prabhupada discouraged him. He didn't want him to run for politics. So Prabhupada was Tarn's well-wisher, not because Tarn was, by this time, a big politician. He was his well-wisher in the beginning. He wanted him to be more involved in spiritual life like his grandfather. But people get sucked in. They think, oh, I can make a big change in politics. Yeah, there's some laughter. But we try, right? Sometimes people do. Prabhupada liked Mr. Shastri. He thought he was a good prime minister. Now things have degenerated. So that impressed me, that he was talking to these ladies, giving them attention, and he would see people all as beloveds of Krishna, and he would act accordingly, and he would be respectful, because you ladies are great souls. You come here in the morning to hear Bhagavad Dharma, you know, and you gentlemen also. You come here to hear the Bhagavad Harikata. So he is understanding this is beyond Varnashram Dharma. These are the bhaktas. Lady bhaktas, male bhaktas, all bhaktas. Different category from Varnashram Dharma, from Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya Sudra. So he was very respectful, and I saw that with those ladies. And that was the last time I saw Prabhupada. He went into his room. And later on, the BBT sent me on a tour of South America to photograph the temple, Spanish and English BBT. And I was in Brazil when Prabhupada left his body. And in Rio de Janeiro, there was only one devotee there who ever met Prabhupada. And the devotees, when they heard, they had a marathon. And they were the big collectors, some of the biggest collectors, book distributors. Book distributors, I won't use the word collectors. That's not a good term. Book distributors is very nice. They used to be more judged by how many books were distributed, not how much money was collected. Money is useful, but it should not be the big status symbol. Anyway, so their dedication is they did a 10-day Maha marathon for distributing books, and they used to do it in the bus stands. They had big, big bus stations because air travel was very expensive in Brazil. Brazil was not a rich country in those days. Now it's becoming very wealthy. They're selling many things to the Chinese, raw materials. So they would distribute many books in Portuguese language. And only one devotee knew Prabhupada. Anyway, the day after Prabhupada passed, I was sleeping, and Prabhupada came to me in a dream. And he was sitting up on his bed, and he said, "I want you to help Bharadwaj." So Bharadwaj Prabhu is, now you're doing dioramas. Prabhupada liked the dioramas. He wanted them in the West. So Bharadwaj is one of the early painters for the Krishna book. He was the one who designed the painting for the original Bhagavad Gita cover. So in the dream, I said, "You mean you want me to accept him as my supervisor?" He said, "Yes." And he said, "Show him." And I saw a big screen, empty movie screen. So it was very cryptic. And then the dream ended. So later on, I helped with the screens behind the dioramas in the LA project, Los Angeles project. And still, those screens haunt me. Prabhupada had asked for a film showing the Indians doing the 9 processes of bhakti, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu. So for the last 11, 12 years, I've been working on this film. I showed some of it here several years ago. Some of the old timers here, they might remember me showing it. And now I'm trying to get it on TV. That's why I'm here in India. I get releases from Kalakshetra in Chennai and the Sharma family of the artists. I use V.G. Sharma's Ram art. Anyway, so that still haunts me. And I have many other stories, but it's getting late and you have to do your service and you're all pretty hungry. And one thing about Prabhupada, he can go on. We were like this also, you know. He was speaking in front of Mr. Agarwal's house, the owner of Sylvania in India. And Prabhupada was so fired up, he would preach and we would all be going, because it was hot. So I don't want to do that to you. I don't want to torture you. Thank you for listening to me. So my generation of devotees, we did great things. So now you have to do greater things. Otherwise, we will not respect you. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
That's Parasaram. Yeah, Jai. He's walking around. He has to go to Delhi and clean up the city a little bit. In Kerala, they still worship him. I was just there. If you go to Gokarna, you can visit Parasaram's birthplace. It's there in one temple. Nice place, small temple. And he's still walking around. So we're waiting for him to come back with that big old bag.